Okay, well, welcome back to the Ultimate Men's Summit. This is Stephen Dinan, the co-host, and I've got to say we've just had a delightful, provocative, fascinating day so far, and I think this next half hour is going to be another highlight for all of you. Very pleased to introduce you to Terry Patton. He co-developed Integral Life Practice with Ken Wilber, and he's part of the core team at Integral Institute. He's also hosted the online teleseminar series Beyond Awakening and engaged dozens of best-known thinkers and spiritual teachers about leading-edge conversations. He speaks and consults and he writes, and he's pretty much a very integral guy. Developing a new pattern for how do we take integral philosophy and bring in heart and embodiment and apply it in very practical ways in our lives. So, Terry, welcome to the Ultimate Men's Summit.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It's great to hear you and be here with you and this community that you're convening, which I'm really grateful that you've done. This is a time in which the women's movement is strong, and women are feeling their excitement about the new power they're bringing in. And it's time for us guys to find our own liberation and our own voice and our own way of coming together. So I'm just grateful that you're taking some leadership and bringing that into focus.
Yeah, well, thank you, and thank you for being a strong stand for that in your own life. Well, let's just begin with the title of the talk, which is one of my favorite titles for the whole summit, Growing Altruistic Balls. Right out of the gates, you're provoking some assumptions and breaking down some barriers between two areas that we often think of separate, that kind of masculine, powerful, intense, primal energy and the altruistic spirit. And so I'd love for you to just unpack that a little for us and share what you mean by that.
What I mean is that as we have evolved over time, human beings have gone from a very ballsy, survival-level way of orienting, and men have been, their identities have been honed in their ability to be warriors and hunters and providers and be able to enter into the competitive survival of the fittest fray and really succeed. And so our strength and our capacity is so associated with our balls. And in the last 100 years, we've broken into a new kind of consciousness, the postmodern awareness in which we suddenly realize that power is often oppressive, that it has marginalized women and racial minorities, and that the way power is used has done tremendous violence, and we've begun to want to speak truth to power. We've begun to want to break down the old power structures, and we've begun to want to get in touch with our own interiors more deeply, and we begin to see all the shame and wounding and all the complexity inside us, and that old model of simply having being identified with our strength, you know, is no longer enough. But in that mode, speaking truth to power, we don't hold power. And I think we're at a time now in history where those who have broken with the old model of masculinity and power are beginning to realize that we've disempowered ourselves. We've left the B team in charge of the world, the men who have not outgrown their egoic, testosterone-driven insanity. The guys who are running the world are guys who behave like Dominique Strauss-Kahn and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Anthony Weiner, and that's just the last few weeks of news. The guys who are running the world are guys who are running it on the basis of a kind of unmediated testosterone. Well, the guys who've woken up to something altruistic are being very virtuous and speaking truth to power, but not really holding power, not really contending to take control of the ship of state. But the ship of state is now sailing over the edge of some pretty precipitous falls. So we have a responsibility. We have an evolutionary responsibility, the consciousness that is humanity able to shift to a conscious mode of evolution has a responsibility. So we actually need to find within ourselves men who care, who really are in service of something more than just their own egoic empowerment. We need to be able to go toe-to-toe with the old the guys who embody the old narcissistic egocentric modality. And we need to have just as much testosterone flowing through us. We need to have just the same level of balls. In fact, more. We need to be able to be smarter and less wedded to our own impulses and therefore able to outcompete the old model. Cooperation needs to outcompete competitiveness, and that takes balls. Now, the first step of that, of course, has to do with a deeper journey into the broken parts of ourselves. It's not only about a kind of bravado and a kind of let's get powerful. We do have to meet ourselves in our shadows and our brokenness and our wounds and each other in that humanity. And we need to be able to actually cooperate in that humanity and be friends to one another, friends in a whole new way. Not just friends in the ordeal of being men in a broken world that tends to tear us apart. Not just being friends healing in the midst of a time of fragmentation. Not just friends who share a shared experience, but friends in the responsibility of turning a vital evolutionary corner. Each of us really feeling called by a higher responsibility and knowing then that we have to get off it deeper and deeper and deeper and be capable of being a friend to another, capable of being self-disclosing and vulnerable. And it's that kind of honesty, vulnerability, courage, and clarity that I think are the raw ingredients of a new kind of altruistic balls, the new kind of men's movement that I feel beginning among some of my friends that I most respect, and it's what I aspire to continually call myself to, and what I hope you're feeling too.
Yeah, well, there's a lot in what you said, and you're really quite poetic in saying it. And I think one of the challenges is putting it fully into practice. So when you talk about being able to outcompete and have even more testosterone than the kind of the, let's call it, the alpha males who are currently running the world, there's a way in which when we run that kind of energy in our system, it tends to activate whatever wound patterns, associations that people who are trying to be conscious have felt from the old. And so oftentimes my experience has been that in theory it sounds great, be, you know, really run more testosterone. But if you do that, oftentimes there's a shrinking back or a fear, or there's things that are activated, and with the enhanced sensitivity that comes with openness, spiritual practice, personal development, that it doesn't always land well. So I've noticed how sometimes people who are in that mode, if they bring in that strong testosterone energy, and it creates a lot of negative ripples in that sense of harmony between people. So it's kind of an interesting question: how do you bring that in a way that really is clean and clear, and that people respond to in a positive way?
Well, I don't think there's a technique. You know, it has to flow from your way of being.
Yeah.
So you have to be dropped down into a way of being that truly is profoundly transpersonal, transegoic. And it's really from that place of knowing that that everybody's got a story that'll break your heart, as the song goes. That the man who is maybe you're feeling frustrated with, or who seems to have interests that diverge from your own, is still a manifestation of this radiant, mysterious, divine reality, and that in your heart is open. You know, just as we're so moved by hearing the stories of how the Dalai Lama's biggest challenge is, or it isn't even so much that it's his challenge. We hear this from other Tibetans. You know, that their practice is to sustain the orientation of compassion toward their Chinese oppressors. Well, that kind of heart for everybody has to be the foundation. So for the most part, we're just barely growing into this. This is a profound new stage of our humanity, and we haven't practiced it much. Just coming in and acting in a assertive and testosterone-filled way, but with a sense that you're going to serve something that's unselfish, is not enough. generally there's going to be unconscious egoic motivations. You're identifying yourself with something unselfish, and you're trying to enlarge your own ego through your altruism. And people feel that, and you end up being an obstruction. You know, so many people in the name of a good cause end up being megalomaniacs. And the kind of thing we're talking about has to be the authentic, real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't arrive at that through asserting it. We actually just feel the call. It's like, oh my God, I've got to go through that dark night of the soul so thoroughly that I can come out the other end not only on my knees, not only broken, not only in love and humbled and so over the game that I no longer have an axe to grind, but so stripped bare that I can actually be a ferocious warrior and leader, that I can actually be a source of strength, that I can actually contend with these very powerful other guys who have played it for just for power and influence and money and ego enlargement, that actually what you're being called to takes you through that whole arc. And if we feel that together and befriend each other in that, because we're not going to get strong all by ourselves one at a time. We need a culture in which other guys are encountering themselves, and we're inspired by their acts of courage, and we're called forward by their help, and we're empowered by the acts of help and kindness that we're bringing to others. It's a collaborative thing.
Yeah. So there's something in there that's been very up for me lately, which is this: the difference between that kind of the challenge and the kind of the competitive goading in a way where you really have the best interest of other people at heart. You're calling forth each other's best, whether that's in sports or in life or in business, that you're wanting the other to excel, versus when the more typical form of competition that we've emerged from is a kind of vanquishing or you know, trying to dominate the other in order to monopolize the power or whatever the end result is. And so I'm just curious if like that subtlety around how do we dance with that, some of the competitive fires that are often associated with masculinity, in a way that really is truly evolutionary for each other.
How do we dance with those masculine fires?
Yeah.
Well, I have a feeling that you have a sense of maybe some of the particular ways that paradox shows up and challenges you, or that you've seen it challenge men you're close to. Maybe we should bring this into some example. I think dancing with the masculine, you know, there is the kind of good men's work. I'm a veteran of many, many years of men's groups. I've done men's groups in the Mankind Project, the data work. I've done, dear friends of mine have done a lot of Sterling work. I've done independent, you know, therapist-facilitated men's groups. I've facilitated men's groups myself. I did a lot of them back in the days of my time in the ashram. And I've seen lots of different forms of how men can support one another. There's something classic, primal and sacred about sitting in a circle with other men who are committed to their own transformation, who are committed to opening to a power greater than themselves, and are interested in being there in the mode of co-practitioners, people who are in the process of their own growth and transformation and who are a stand for one another's growth and transformation. Now, out of that, you can support each other in going into your wounds. Out of that, you can support each other in standing up in your life. You can simply be there because it's so lonely to be a man, and you can be less alone if other men can be there with you in your life. And you know, can do many of those things together. What we haven't got much of a model for is doing that whole array of things and rising up the way that the founding fathers of the American Revolution did, rising up the way that the guys who founded the philosophes and the Enlightenment did, the way that conscious, you know, and historically it was men, you know, I mean, we do this with our sisters too today, but there's a piece of it that we do with other men, and that draws on an incredible lineage, because it was always men alone who turned these great corners in history. We've got to be together, recognizing that in our lifetimes, this evolutionary process may be crossing points of no return where things we really love can be lost. And that calls on us to show up in new ways. And if you're present with one another, not just as guys who are healing and who are lonely and who need to do their work and who need support and who need to be met in the ordeal, the riddle and koan of their lives, but guys who are also, who've been handed a koan, a question by the universe that we all need to answer together. You're trying to exercise leadership, and you're doing wonderful things, Stephen, but you probably feel you could serve better, and you want to. You're asking, how can I be more effective? How can I do this in a way that really does it? You know, your successes fuel a hunger for even being more effective. Mine do. And being together in that question, letting it inquire of us, and being a support, not just for the human being who's before you, but the possibility of us individually and together. That gives me access to a whole different level of power. You know, how I'm a frail, or not necessarily frail, but a 120-pound, 5'3" woman can go over and pick a car up if it's sitting on her child, you know. That kind of power that comes into a human being when you're defending something greater than yourself, where you're advocating for something that matters, that's where our heroism has come from.
Yeah, it's interesting. Thinking of the knights on the knee kind of consecrating their service to the ladies, the sort of the queen or the lady, that there needs to be that consecration of the masculine to something higher, or else it ultimately starts to kind of implode on itself. Does that resonate with you?
Absolutely resonates. Very strongly. That's exactly the whole point.
So what have you found? So you're a big champion of integral practice and really bringing all these different dimensions of ourselves to their next level of expression. So in terms of specifically for men, so much of our spiritual traditions have in a way softened us and opened us, and sometimes there's a more yin or feminine quality to a lot of the spiritual circles that we run in. So what do you find is an integral approach, an integral practice that really honors and awakens the full masculine in us, as well as balancing us?
You know, an integral practice is a whole life that is understood to be seamlessly connected to the whole, and therefore lived on behalf of something greater than oneself, in which we are called upon in every dimension of our being. We're called to clarity in our minds. We're called to love, and we're called not to face our pain and our brokenness, you know, in our hearts and in our feelings. We're called to go below the glibness and the conceptual levels of our being into our real soul nature. We're called to show up here, now, vitally, right here, this moment, this life, calling us out of our adolescence, our childhood, into really being men. That sense that it's omnidirectional, and that it's natural, and that it's worship, but that it takes the form of creativity, it takes the form of service, it takes the form of empowering ourselves, it takes the form of every possible expression, lived not from the old every man for himself model. So, you know, I teach an approach in which there's a daily practice, usually in the morning, which there's moments of practice throughout the day that liberate the clarity of unobstructed awareness and also the open feeling heart, and also bring us into bodily service of the world around us, in which there's a sense of mission, in which we're engaging specific milestones that we're accomplishing in service of something greater than ourselves, co-creating with a greater power, not just self-authoring, me doing my 20 watts, but no, letting opening to a bigger power, and that we're engaging it in a way that transforms us. And doing that in a way that includes all the spheres of our being, body, mind, spirit, psyche, soul, our relationships, intimate relationships, and also our civic responsibility as citizens of a world that's in crisis. That's what I call integral practice. So I don't give a practice so often. I shouldn't say that. I do. You know, here's one, Stephen. Here's a really good one. The next time that beach ball starts spinning or that little clock shows up on your computer, take it as a message from God that it's time for you to drop in and feel and breathe and bring your attention to your heart and clear your head and reorient to your feet. Bring your energy, your whole body and being, and reawaken to the deepest sanity you've got. And then go back to dealing with whatever document is slow to open or web page is slow to load or hitting restart, getting your computer going back again. Let that moment of waiting not be a moment of waiting.
I like that. It's sort of using every moment available as an opportunity to evolve and to really see it as all as grist for the mill.
Yeah.
The spinning ball in the computer.
Yeah, exactly.
So as we're moving, part of the thesis of this whole summit is that we're really entering a whole new era for masculinity, and you've implied it in several things you've said. And so we're calling that 21st century masculinity. And what do you really see that it is that we are most needing to let go of, belief systems, habits of being, and in order to enter into this new opportunity, this new pattern?
We need to, the main thing that we need to do is to admit that we're all scared shit and we're ashamed that we're scared. And we're not admitting it to ourselves or each other, and so we're phony, and therefore everything we do on the basis of it is bullshit. And when we admit it to ourselves, and we look each other in the eye, and the space has been changed by that mutual acknowledgement, then we can begin to be true.
As you say that, I can really feel you drop into your heart and just drop beneath the mask that we're so much taught to wear, which is that the myth of male invulnerability.
Yeah, and it's a myth. And, you know, every time somebody asks me how I'm doing and I say fine, I know I'm really saying, I don't know if it's appropriate to get into it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we say fine and we don't remember that there's more to it than that, we lie to ourselves, you know. It's good that we respond to this tremendously difficult life with positive energy. You know, it's good that there's something in us that bounces back, that we get up more times than we get knocked down. That's good, but we don't have a way of being men who hurt and men who are also heroic. But the new hero doesn't have to pretend he doesn't hurt. He doesn't have to pretend that it's easy. He doesn't have to defend himself against the ordeal and tragedy and kind of mask any of it. He can be, you know, real courage is something that can only be manifested by someone who's afraid. That's, I think it's getting off it that's the first ingredient of the kind of new masculine heroism, the kind of altruistic balls that our world needs. You know, the evolutionary process right now, this 13.7 billion year process that's been going on, this incredible whole sweep of human history, the fate of innumerable species more or less is going to be determined by what happens in human cultural evolution over the course of the next few decades. So in our lifetimes, in your lifetime, stuff is going to go down. It's going to have evolutionary significance. And we have to care about that. We have to, it's morally necessary for us to find a way to be effective in the face of that. And I don't think we know how to yet. I'm not satisfied. I'm not effective enough. I'm more effective than I've ever been in my life. A lot of people look at me as a model of somebody who's a really committed evolutionary. I need to be way more effective.
And it's great to have that model of humility while also, you know, the courage to suit up and to keep saying yes, even when you feel the fear and even when you feel broken down, even when it feels a little too much, just to keep saying yes and going for that next level without turning it into, you know, another mask. And I love that the way you were just dropping the mask and speaking from the fear and the need to bring our vulnerability together with our most courageous self. Beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Stephen. Thanks for receiving it. Thanks for evoking it, and thanks for creating a forum where this conversation is reaching more and more sincere, intelligent, evolving guys.
That's great. Well, we want to get a couple questions, perhaps, if we've got time. I see a couple ones already. I'm assuming those are questions now. Why don't we get a question from Ridge? You're live.
Hey, Terry. How you doing?
I'm good. Nice to hear your voice, Ridge.
Thank you. Yeah, author of Intelligent Life, Integral Life Practice. That just really hit the spot for me, and I appreciate the metaphor of using balls, because I very much, I just relate to that, to where you got to call up that deep courage in which you, move into something to make positive change. But the question I had was earlier on in your sharing where it was healing that which keeps us from opening ourselves. What would be the key ingredients of an ideal facilitation that you may put on that would create the safe container for men to feel comfortable or free to open ourselves?
Well, you know, it depends on the context. You know, it's a very different thing to open the space in a room full of, 100 or 200 or 300 guys than it is to do it in a circle of eight or in a one-on-one conversation. One of the ways that you have to lead is by example. And you can't do that by reciting something you've thought about already that you just know. You've got to, in the moment, kind of get off it and do that. This, taking off your armor and showing your heart. And then you basically usually have to draw somebody else into that process. And the more that you can do that in a way that shows some toughness but doesn't tend to do it in a violent way, the early phase of men's work proceeded in a little bit of a martial spirit where we really valued, tough facilitators in the model of Fritz Perls so there's a bunch of famous early facilitators who were just, they could just take a guy apart, I think right now it's nice if you can find your way to invite somebody into an openness that doesn't necessarily have to conk him on the head. And you just begin to create a field where when people just naturally recognize the truth of that and they resonate with it, the whole field shifts, and it becomes an invitation. And a lot of it has to do with just knowing that your own vulnerability, that you're getting off it, is truer. It has more dignity. It has more nobility. It has more balls than the brittle, know-it-all, wise-ass kind of superficial place that guys will tend to hang in otherwise. And if you're willing to bleed in front of people and you're willing to just be a stand for that greater level of depth, and you do it in love, you find your openings, and the whole field begins to resonate with a sympathy for it, and more people get drawn into it. That's my experience.
Great. Why don't we get one more question from Joshua? You're live.
Thank you both. I appreciate and respect the altruistic balls that you are bringing together in this conversation. And my question for you both is, what's the biggest setback that you've experienced in your mission and your purpose in the world, and how did you deal with that setback so that we can all learn from your experience?
Terry, you want to go first?
Oh, of course I'd rather you go first, but that would be very ballsy, wouldn't it?
No, I could just go briefly. I mean, when I first got the download from the universe in a meditation retreat to create the Shift Network, it wasn't called the Shift Network. It was in 2000, had a cushy job with Esalen that was great, left, tried to start a startup company, ran a bunch of debt, made some progress, and basically went broke. And I was, you know, got to the stage of completely running out of credit cards and whatever. And that was a very humbling moment. And I, frankly, it wasn't a single thing that got me through, but I allowed myself to be really broken down by that. And my whole pride around, I had given my best to manifest this higher vision and hadn't been enough. And to surrender into that and be humbled to, like, okay, well, what do I do now? Since I had taken it on with a real warrior spirit. And that actually was an important initiation to prepare me to later be able to do what we're doing now with the Shift Network, is that going through the failure of the mission was itself a preparation, because it broke me down emotionally as a leader and really forced me to kind of find deeper resources, to build other skills, to recognize where I still needed to develop. And I think that so it was just kind of a gradual recognition that breaking down was necessary to do what I'm eventually doing now.
Thank you for sharing that, Stephen. I think that in fact it has been the accumulation of many moments in which I've felt defeated. I know that when this is a particular moment maybe worth telling. I was with a great spiritual teacher for the first 15 years of my adult life, from the time I was 22 to the time I was 37. I was with Adi Da, who's bigger than life, an amazing transmitter. And I reached a place where I had to leave. And in leaving, I was still in love with him, and I was still involved in a guru yoga in which my very relationship with the divine and with a kind of transcendental life energy that was really coursing through me yogically was all up and on the line. And what it took for me to disentangle my reactivity and my anger, my frustration with myself, my sense of failure, and really hear, find my own ability to distinguish the signal of what was true, so that I could actually love him and be grateful to him and say goodbye and say no and turn and walk in a different direction and possibly lose my relationship with pretty much all my friends and the whole world that I knew. It's these moments when you don't know how it's going to come out and you have a chance to act on the basis of your values, and you find a way to do that instead of to create karma by acting on the basis of your fear. Those are really the empowering moments. It's when you're knocked down and you find through grace that, you know, you pray in a way, pray for the courage and clarity to show up in a way that is an invocation of what's best in you and best for the world. Those are
awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks for the question, Joshua.
Great question.
Great.
Yeah, thank
still
you
there,
very
but
much.
Okay, so, well, we're at the end of our time. So, Terry, you're really fantastic dropping into this level of depth of honesty and insight just in a half an hour. So just want to give you a chance to let people know how to keep in contact with you and the many facets of your work.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'd like to invite people to visit my own website, integralspiritualpractice.com. And there's a course that I teach in Integral Spiritual Practice where I really take you step by step through the process of building a daily practice, and for that to be truly integral, really bringing together your masculine self-compassion, your toughness, and your feminine self-compassion, your tenderness to yourself. And you can find that, there's actually a free little seminar about it at ISP Seminar, Integral Spiritual Practice, ispseminar.com. And then there's a page that advertises it more, theispcommunity.com. And there's also something called Beyond Awakening, which is a series of interviews I do with teachers on this question: how can our spirituality help us rise to the challenge of our time of crisis? And that you can find that at gobeyondawakening.com.
Great. Well, highly recommend your work. You're really doing fantastic work. So thank you so much, Terry, for this time together. And really, it's been a great blessing for us. So,
well, thank you, Stephen. It's an honor and a delight, and good work, bro.
Thank you.
I'm punching your shoulder, baby.
That's great. And so let's go ahead and let Terry move on to the rest of his day. And we have another great call later with Lion, who's going to be interviewing Hal Stone, one of the co-founders of Voice Dialogue, and exploring some important subjects. Lion, maybe actually, since I see you're on here, you want to say a few words about that, what you're excited about?
Sure. Hal Stone is one of my favorite teachers. The voice dialogue process has been taught to thousands of people around the world, therapists, coaches, and lay people who use it to get to know their inner landscape. So if you've ever heard a voice in your head, and who hasn't among us, whether it's an inner critic or a pusher or mom or dad, come listen to our talk and learn more about your inner voices.
Great. And so what we're going to have now is the opportunity for you to be in groups of dialogue groups, small groups. So we'll just do two groups, either all men or mixed groups for the ladies who are here. If you want to be with other men and have some dialogue about what you just heard, touch 1. If you'd like to be in a mixed group, just touch 2 on your keypad. In a moment, we'll ring the bell, and then you'll be in groups, and you can dialogue a bit for probably only about 25 minutes or so. We're going to shut down the call because we need to clear up some things with the interface before we start the 5 o'clock call. So enjoy connecting with each other for the next half hour, and we'll look forward to continuing our journey into 21st century masculinity.